Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WinBet. Get started today and you'll get a risk-free bet of up to $500. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at WynNBet.com and download the app today. We're also brought to you by Better Than Vegas. Better Than Vegas is your home to free daily video picks from the SGPN crew. It's like YouTube for sports gambling. Make sure to subscribe to our profile at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. And we're also brought to you by Roman. Roman is the straightforward way to take care of your ED. Just head on over to roman.com/SGP for $15 off your first month. That's getroman.com/SGP. And finally, we are also doing a $500 FCS playoff bracket challenge that is completely free. So head on over to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/FCS. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/FCS. And one final note before we get started with the MMA Gambling Podcast. If you are listening to this on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network feed, first of all, we're not going to be here much longer. That's right. We have started our own feed, and we've actually been over on that other feed for a little while now. We won't be in both places forever, so I highly suggest that if you are on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network feed, head on down into the show notes, click the link that'll take you to the main MMA Gambling Podcast feed. That's where we'll be for the foreseeable future. That's where we're going to be, so make sure to subscribe there, leave us a little review. We certainly do appreciate it. Now, let's get on with the show.
Hello, degenerates, back in your ear hole, eardrums. It's the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, episode 32, a.k.a. Head Kick Communism, is what I'm going to call it. And my co-host isn't allowed to talk yet, so he cannot say that he's offended by that or anything, even though he knows I'm joking. But yes, it's called Head Kick Communism, and I'm picturing one of those Cold War era posters with like a young girl with a shaved head wearing, I don't know, say, overall shorts, head kicking a communist fighter. That's what I'm picturing. So not naming any names or anything, but anyhow, enough of that nonsense. Welcome back, or if you're here for the first time, welcome here for the first time. Hopefully you're listening to this on our new dedicated feed, the MMA Gambling Podcast feed, and not on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network feed, because we want you all over on our new feed, because eventually we are going to be no more on the main feed. I think it's the plan. We're just going to be on our own MMA Gambling Podcast feed. So make sure you are subscribing there, and thank you to everyone who has already been subscribing there. For some reason, we have a lot of people from Germany listening. So willkommen, meine Brüder und... damn it, I can't remember sister now. Do you know how to say sister, Dan?
I don't know. I do know just only like small amounts of Dutch. I could tell you man and woman in Dutch, which is mannen and vrouwen. And I could tell you ik ben een schildpad, which means I am a turtle.
Which is what Dan is on the Top Turtle Podcast. He is a turtle. So I said, welcome to my brothers and... Now I'm going to have to look up sister, even though I just learned sister, too. And I already forgot what it is. Schwestern, that's what it is. Mein Bruder und Schwestern. Anyhow, welcome to, no matter what language you listen in, welcome. I'm Jeff Fox, your host. I say Am and Allah, according to my son, and I just caught myself saying Am there, so apparently he's right. I am a writer, editor over at sportsgamblingpodcast.com, and I run the MMA site, MMA-manifesto.com. I broke my rules, and I allowed my associate host to speak before he was introduced. Usually he's not allowed to speak. He's only allowed to laugh. And he's actually encouraged to laugh at all my jokes leading up to it, whether he's uncomfortable by them or not. His name's Daniel Gumby Vreeland. What does he do? He writes for Sports Gambling Podcast. He writes for MMA-Manifesto. He also hosts Top Turtle MMA Podcast and the Prelim Picker Podcast. And he's the associate co-host here, and I gave him a production title. I think I might be taking that away because I have to do a lot of production now. Not his fault, but I have to do a lot of production too. So maybe he's also an associate production head coordinator guy. So anyhow, let's introduce him. I like to drag this out, and he never knows when I'm actually going to pitch to him, which is nice. Like right there, I could have pitched to him, but I didn't. I just like making long pauses.
I assume that's the term.
Dan, I didn't introduce you yet. No. Everybody, Daniel Gumby Vreeland. Hi,
Dan. Well, thank you for introducing me in a succinct way. It felt
gotta keep you on your toes.
I will say, given all the extra time we had on this weekend's card, where you said you were expecting three boring ass decisions for title fights. We had a bunch of extra time, so we now just filled some of that time for those people, took it back from them with some pregnant pauses before introducing me.
Exactly. It's all about trying to keep Dan on his toes, and I don't want him to get too comfortable here. And after his picks the past few weeks, I hope he hasn't been getting too comfortable, because I am back in charge again after this past weekend. Not only did communism get head kicked, but Dan got head kicked with his picks last weekend because I went 9-4, Dan went 6-7. I thought I would save that until I actually introduced him, because he usually has typical losing person has a bunch of excuses for why some ref did him in or someone's leg broke when it wasn't supposed to break. It's always the same thing with this guy.
Yeah, we will never know what should have happened in Chris Weidman's fight. That one is for sure.
That's what should have happened.
But we did know that Stefan Sekulic, in my opinion, should have won that fight. I should have had an extra plus 180 right there.
Yeah, that's true. You did. Yeah, there was. I guess it. We don't basically get an event in the books without at least one questionable decision. It seems we haven't complained about Herb Dean for quite a while, so kudos to him. He's still been there, but he's been kind of finding seeds. But yeah, Dan got screwed up of some money there, plus money too. The majority of the media who were obviously were the smartest people around. We had Sekulic winning, but Grant won officially, and that was my pick. So tough for you, Dan. And tough that someone broke his leg, and actually tough that your lock pick got drop foot, and it was an interesting night.
It was weird as hell.
It was very, very weird. And now Dan lost his lock pick, lost, but I also have picked that person to win. But yet I smiled when he lost, because I thought, well, that's Dan's lock pick. So if I'm gonna lose a fight, I may as well lose one that Dan's got more riding on than I do.
Even with just out of curiosity, where you had that, even with the like weird drop foot and he fell down, would you have still given that round to Jimmy Crute? Was he up a round on Anthony Smith?
Yeah, I don't know about that. It was interesting because Smith was more damaged for sure. Not even talking about his foot, like his face was getting eaten up by those jabs. So
that's true. But he's got one of those pale faces that instantly looks like it is jacked up after like two jabs. But like he had leg kicked Smith like seven or eight times. Granted, not with the same impact, which of course is where the rules come into play, right? Like the impact is supposed to matter. Smith obviously had the big impactful strike, but he also had ground control too, and some pretty decent ground and pound. And that was after the drop foot, which I think was even maybe more impressive. It was, I could see giving the round to Smith, but like if that had gone to the judges' scorecards at the end and like they split the next two rounds, I would have drawn a question mark after round one, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, that was, I wasn't super happy about losing, but you know, my lock came through as predicted, and he came through via submission as predicted. So how about we actually do this? Let me give you the stats, and then we'll actually do this in some sort of order. So we're as scattershot as the card was last night. We're all over the place. So I was 9-4. Dan was 6-7. So on the year, I am up to 55%. So I'm creeping closer to that 60% rate I want to be at. Dan is down to 51%. I am still down more money than Dan, though. I'm down like $400 more than he is. So
is that because I hit that 270 underdog that one time?
Here we go, that one time. And it's true, that would actually do the trick.
Pretty much the entire thing.
Yeah, exactly. As for locks, I am 6-1 now. I urge everyone to follow my locks. If you're going to do anything with your money, follow my locks. 6-1, up $270, up 38%. Dan is 3-4, down $200. So just ignore Dan, please. He's just here for the eye candy. And so I don't have to talk to myself. All right, so that is the stats. We'll break down the card in a sec, but I'm going to tell you about our friends at WynnBET first, because WynnBET is bringing you the action of real sports betting with the Wynn Las Vegas experience. Check in on all your favorite teams, players, and sports games. Generous promos, odds, and parlays are happening right now at WynnBET. Get started today and you'll receive a special offer up to $500 risk-free sports bet. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at wynnbet.com and download the app today. Okay, so as most people listening to this, I'm more than likely you watched the card Saturday night and you were as gobsmacked as we were, I think, about all the craziness that went on there. First of all, there's a crowd of 15,269, which was crazy since we haven't seen that in years. I saw a photo of one person with a mask in the crowd, so I guess the other 15,268 were vaccinated probably, and that guy wasn't.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. Is that how it works in the States?
I don't know how it works, but I will tell you, my favorite part was they cut during one of the really early prelims. I think it was the ESPN2 prelims. They cut to like, you know, the stands aren't packed at that point in time.
Right.
You know, there's people trickling in. For some reason, people will pay money for those tickets and then show up for three fights or something like that. But there was like this one section of five guys, and they like zoomed in on them, and one of them just started hacking and coughing in like the middle, and the camera immediately cut away, and I was like, man, that is just some really unfortunate timing.
That is Florida. I shouldn't group Dan and the rest of you Americans in with Floridians because they're a special breed, but we love you nonetheless. So yeah, it was a packed house. The gate was 3.3 million. I forgot to report this on the site, my site today. You have to go back and do that. But even Tom Brady was there. So there you go. The stars were out to see this. Nick Diaz was there. Apparently he wants to fight again. We'll probably talk more on him later, but so these stands were packed, and if you wanted to get a tweet on TV, all you had to do was tweet about how great it was to see people in the stands, because every tweet was a PR for UFC saying how great it was that they're doing this. So that was your way onto TV last night for sure. So we'll go from the top to bottom. No surprise we won, but probably a surprise how it went down. Welterweight championship. Kamaru Usman knocked out. He really knocked out Jorge Masvidal in the second round, early in the second round. First round went pretty much how all us quote-unquote experts expected it. Usman basically dominated him on the ground, had his way with him. But second round, he knocked his block off, and that's the new – this is a new Kamaru Usman that we saw there. The days of calling him boring may be over, because that's three out of the past four fights he has finished people. He seems to have more of a eye of the tiger, to quote a song from Rocky, but he seems to have a lot more of the killer in him, or as Dana White would say, killer, or a beast, or a savage in him, because he slept Jorge Masvidal, and his star seems to be on the rise, at least in my books, and at least by the traffic I'm getting as of Saturday night, Sunday morning from him.
Yeah, I think the stardom is big for this one, right? Because it's the first time you've seen him beat somebody who has like pretty significant name value behind him in an emphatic way, right? Like, because you know, Colby Covington, you know, he might get some of the clicks, but nowhere near as much as Jorge Masvidal. You know, Gilbert Burns doesn't have that kind of pull. Tyron Woodley never had that kind of pull. And like, the first time he beat Masvidal, you know, they said the built-in excuse, the fact that it was a five-round decision, and yeah, it was one-sided. This did a lot for his stock in the public's eye. I will also say this before we move too deep into this. You said it may be a little bit surprising how we did it. I will say, if you go back and listen to last week's episode, somebody told you to take the prop Usman inside the distance by TKO because I saw a lot of value in that, and he was finishing people. And I think, you know, that sort of, you know, you mentioned that people saw him as a decision guy, right? Like, as a guy who has really boring fights, which really hadn't been the case for most of the ones leading up to this, with the exception of the Masvidal one, which must have been fresh on people's minds, and you know, like, people forget about that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I think, you know, Usman looked amazing and like, literally could not have done more for his own stock in a single fight than he did right there.
Right. Plus, I did, hopefully our bosses at Sports Gambling Podcast did what they said they were going to do, but when I was on the flagship show last week, I mentioned Usman via decision probably would be my pick, but he has been finishing people, but Masvidal's hard to finish, and I think they were thinking about, because they're degens like all of us, and they were thinking about getting in on some of that Usman via knockout action, so hopefully they did. Yeah, to be fair, you didn't see him sleeping Jorge Masvidal on the feet, though.
I thought it was more ground and pound finish. Yeah. Ground and pound finish, he more like it, or a stun to a ground and pound, not like, you know, like he did to Gilbert Burns, right? Gilbert Burns, he put on his ass
right.
with a really stiff jab, right. and then the follow-up shots did the trick. I kind of thought something like that was probably going to happen. Or like you said, ground and pound wouldn't have been surprising. But, yeah, the just one-touch knockout power. I mean, he added a couple of follow-up shots, which I don't know if you caught some of the post-fight conference where he said those follow-up shots were super necessary, which I thought was just so good. But, yeah, I definitely, you're right, did not see him knocking him out like that.
Yeah, so you gave him a three-piece in the soda while he was unconscious. Already, so. Yeah, because Masvidal did not get, he's never been knocked out. Like, he got TKO'd in Sengoku. You remember that? Remember Sengoku way back in the olden days? And
I actually
Japanese.
Do. Didn't they have a freaking awesome tournament one time?
They did.
With oh, man, I'm not going to remember the names exactly, but I want to say
they had a bunch of cool tournaments, yeah.
Yeah, that was a fun promotion that sort of disappeared, like, without any real warning either. Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. After Pride died, there was a few cool ones, like Dream and Sengoku and stuff came up. But anyhow, that's my first foray off into the woods there. But, yeah, he got TKO'd in Sengoku in 2008, and that's it. That's the only time he's ever been stopped via punches, via strikes, and he didn't just get stopped us. He got knocked out, which probably more on him later, but we'll wrap up on Usman first. Whether he's the greatest, he's not the greatest welterweight ever. That's like Dana White says, that's just him selling the pay-per-view, plus any chance he gets to stick knives in George St. Pierre's back, he seems to take the chance. But he's getting in that realm, though. At the very least, he's getting up into George's stratosphere.
Yeah, the thing that probably keeps him back for me is, I think what I used to think was so great about GSP and why he sticks out as the GOAT is because, like, there were very few GSP rematches, right? Like, he didn't continuously beat the same two or three guys. He, like, the UFC just kept selling us, like, oh, no, we were wrong before. Thiago Alves is the one to beat GSP. Get hyped for this. And then you'd watch
him.
Yeah, and then he'd dismantle him. And then he would be like, oh, no, actually, we're sorry. Dan Hardy is the one who's going to do it. Oh, no, we're sorry. It was John Fitch who's going to stop him with the wrestling. And, oh, we were wrong again about that. And it's just like that constantly, right? Like, that was the UFC. Their marketing machine was in full force to just be like, anybody as a challenger against GSP is a great shot. And then GSP just kept turning him away in different ways. And I think Usman's doing that same thing where he's starting to turn people away in ways that you aren't ready for, right? Like, this one was a great example of it. Even the Gilbert Burns one was maybe a little surprising. And, like, he's getting that, but then, like, I mean, like, would it be surprising to you if his next two fights are also rematches? You know, like, would it be surprising to see him fight, you know, Masvidal, Covington, Burns, Masvidal, Covington, Burns, right? Like, it's very possible that that's a six-fight run for him. And not like that doesn't prove that he's great, but, like, would it be more fun to see him fight Wonder Boy? Would it be more fun to see him fight Michael Chiesa? Would it be more fun to see him fight somebody like Sean Brady after, like, two or three wins who's got, like, clearly a weird game for him to figure out? All of those, like, stylistically would, like, reveal a little bit more about Usman other than, like, oh, yeah, he's still as good as he was the last time he beat Burns or the last time he beat Covington. So, yeah, I think he's getting there, but I'm not sure the path he's going to take is ever going to really make me feel convinced that he made it.
True. And the forgotten man was forgotten again by you in that list of people. Leon Edwards. Yeah. He's always overlooked. He's kind
Wasn't
of...
Wasn't he going to get beat by Nate Diaz? Isn't that what people
yeah,
want?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, being this dominant at welterweight, like, you have to say majority of athletes, when they're dehydrating themselves down, they fall right in that lightweight welterweight range. So these are basically are the most competitive divisions you're gonna have in the sport. They have the most fighters in it, and they seem you're gonna get the best quality of competition. So it is, you know, it is impressive that he's dominating one of these middle divisions like lightweight or welterweight, because like I said, the statistically they're the ones where you get all the top athletes, because once they're all dehydrated back up, once they're hydrated back up, they're up closer to the 200-pound range. So usually we like to ask who's next, but we already know sounds like it's going to be a rematch. Colby Covington, Dan's already got his next fight figured out too. It's going to be Gilbert Burns after that, apparently. So,
I mean, if Gilbert Burns beats Wonderboy, I almost guarantee that's it, right? Like, because you're not going to give it to Leon Edwards coming off of a Nate Diaz win, right? Like,
no,
that's such a bad fight for Leon. I mean, it's good for him in a way. Like, if he went out there and finished Nate Diaz, which I don't think he's going to finish him, but if he went out there and finished him, he would get a pop just like, you know, like a smaller version, but just like Usman did for beating Masvidal. Yeah. So I think maybe that's cool for him, but yeah, like, I mean, dude, he just keeps talking himself out of fights that seem to make him closer to a title shot, right? Like, he seemingly didn't want the Wonder Boy fight, which I get it. Wonder Boy's a weird dude to deal with, but, man, like, Leon Edwards just tries to find a way to make it not very convincing to give him a title shot.
Very, very true. So, we got more than likely we got Colby Covington next. That's almost set in stone. I got some odds emailed to me today. What do you think the opening odds are from this unnamed sportsbook? Because we only want you to bet at WinBet.
So I bet you. I bet you Covington is like -200 is his next opponent, or even a little higher.
Oh no, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. The actual that they're expecting the fight to happen. What are the actual odds?
Oh,
on the
odds
fight?
For
He's
that
fight.
Oh, yeah. They're already saying it's booked. Oh,
yeah, pretty much. Usman was -190 last time. For those keeping track at home, according to this info I have in front of me, at least.
Ooh, it's weird because you would think Usman's stock could be higher in this, but their first fight was really close, which it never, you know, like the Masvidal one never really was. I'm gonna say I'll stick with my original guess for what I thought about the fight being booked. I'll say -200.
-300 for Usman, +240 for Covington. So yeah,
I actually think there's some value in Covington on that side, and I say that as somebody who really hopes that Usman does pretty much exactly what he did this past weekend. because I want to see him against guys like Wonderboy, and I want to see him against guys like Chiesa and Sean Brady and people like that. So the Covington rematch does little for me, you know, and if he loses to Covington, we're definitely talking trilogy and we're getting really nowhere in this division. So, I hope he just flatlines Covington real quickly. With that being said, their first fight was very close, and very competitive. And I think people forget how competitive it was. So I definitely think +240, you're talking good money there for Colby.
There you go. Dan's tipping his hand early on for you. Before we move off Usman, one thing I do have to say is refreshing is he doesn't call his opponents. He takes whoever they feed to him. So I think that's one thing that can go in your favor if you want to be considered the greatest of all time. You beat all and every and all challenger that served up to you. You don't go looking for money fights or BMF titles or anything like that. So his the the vanquished Jorge Masvidal should have just seems like he should have just stuck in the BMF realm, because that seems to be the range, basically the type of fights that, that he's best in are those fun fights and not battling Kamaru Usman back-to-back fights where he's could be one of the greatest welterweights of all time. My friend, I do actually have a friend who texted me this morning saying how he thinks Masvidal's made maybe one of the biggest career blunders of anyone in MMA, at least in recent times, because he was pretty much on top of the world, fan favorite, man of the people, back in his winning the BMF title and stuff. And then he took a sharp turn, deciding he wanted to be a Cuban Conor McGregor, and decided he was going to, you know, wear silk robes and start up companies. And then he took another drastic turn and decided he was going to be Mr. Political like Colby Covington, and he was going to be Mr. MAGA, which turned off a lot of people. So he seems to still, you know, bring eyeballs into things, but he was really, like, he was up there with the upper echelons of most popular fighters in the sport, and he seems to have dropped the ball with that, not just in the cage, but out.
Yeah, I think in the cage he dropped it too, and I know it was his dream to be champion and stuff like that, but if we're talking about how he could have made buckets of money, man, dude, like, after he won that BMF title, going right to try to fight Usman, and then, like, after getting beat by Usman, not then using, you know, the excuse that, hey, I had this short camp, I can, you know, fight him again. And, like, maybe he thought he was going to win the rematch. We obviously didn't. The odds obviously didn't, you know, seem to speak that way. It feels like he should have, like, cashed in on one more big winnable fight then before getting dismantled again. And I know that's probably not the way he thinks about his career, but, like, would it have been unreasonable for him to ask for a Conor McGregor fight after that? At 170?
That would have been huge.
It would have sold a ridiculous amount of money, and like, he could have pretended to put the BMF title on the line or something like that, dude. He would have just printed money for himself in the UFC. I think he miscalculated it, because I think this loss in the cage, you know, we're just talking about all the stock that gets added to Usman. I think he directly takes that stock from Jorge Masvidal, right? Like, Masvidal's, I don't get knocked out, you know, the guy I'm fighting has pillow hands kind of deal. Dude, that shtick is gone now. And, you know, props to him for handling the loss well, because I think when they interviewed him in the cage, he handled it like a like the pro you wish he was the whole time. But, yeah, I think you're right. Handling in and out of the cage just seems to have not probably worked the best financially for him, where it could have gone much, much better.
Yeah, no, we hate to criticize a guy who actually decides that the title is important, because that we see it's not important to a lot of people. But it's he seemed to bite off more than he can chew. Whether he can catch the magic again, it's hard to say. Probably not. But he's can still be a force in the sport if he starts taking. If he's like a more active Nate Diaz or more active Conor McGregor fights.
What if he, speaking of, like, can he recapture some of the magic, what if he is the one who wants to fight Nick Diaz next? Because I know Nick Diaz is there looking for a fight. I mean, he sort of beat Nate, right? Like, because there's the injury and, like, and maybe he didn't actually win the BMF title. What if he beats Big Brother, too? Like, would that capture it again?
That's where I was headed, yep. That seems to be the fight to make. People were saying it was a fight to make if Masvidal won. That would be typical Nick Diaz, though, getting a title shot when he hasn't won in a decade or whatever. But, yeah, no, that Nick Diaz would be a perfect fight for him. Masvidal could win that fight. Diaz, like I've said before, he's made his reputation off of losing to people, not beating people. So that would be a very good fight for Masvidal and to get back on the horse and get the ball rolling again. So, all the talk about pillow hands and stuff. All the smirking as he was getting hit. Yeah, that didn't really play out too well in the second round. A minute or two into the second round, to be exact. So that is the main event. Very exciting, unexpected main event. Like, I was joking on Twitter, like, saying how the night went down just how I planned it. Three boring five-round decisions in the main events, but that was definitely not the case. We got five rounds total in the three three fights that happened. So we'll break down the other two in one sec. But first, let me tell you about Roman. Look, no one's perfect, especially Gumby after last weekend. I'm close to it, but Gumby is not. Even the best baseball players strike out when the base is loaded. The best golfers sometimes three-putt with the tournament on the line. So if you feel like you come up short in the bedroom sometimes, it's perfectly okay. But if it's bothering you, there are options. Go to GetRoman.com/SGP now. With Roman, you can get free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S.-licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/SGP and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. So go to GetRoman.com/SGP now to get $15 off your first month. Look, there's a straightforward way to take care of your ED. GetRoman.com/SGP. Get started now. Save $15 on your first month of treatment. Now, after the show, I'm going to have to explain down what ED is, but that's not going to be fun. anyhow, let's move on. Women's strawweight. This was the one where communism got head kicked, everybody. I'm saying all this tongue-in-cheek in case you're listening for the first time, I think. Rose tarnished her reputation with all that communism nonsense. But regardless, she head kicked Zhang Weili into the nether and recaptured the women's strawweight title. Recapturing titles is a very rare thing to occur. It hardly ever happens, especially at lower weight classes. You hardly ever see women's strawweights head kicking each other, knocking each other out that way either. So this was a very rare occurrence. But she is the champ again. Only took her a minute 18. Dan picked her to win. I picked her to lose. But Dan had the win here. I don't think he saw it going this way, but he'll take the plus 165 regardless.
Yeah, I don't think I saw it going this way either. You know, I did think she could outpoint her and stay away from the power, which I think was what the promise I had there was, that I thought she was craftier. But, I mean, ultimately she was craftier in that, like, you know, I said she had more nuanced striking. I think that's what caused this head kick to work, too, because if you look, Weili Zhang, or Zhang Weili, or however you want to say it. I'll say it the bastardized way. So, you know, I think if you look at that knockout, she reacts very clearly to thinking it's a leg kick. You see both of her legs scoot back like it's a leg kick. It comes right up off the top. And I think that's part of why it was so impactful, too, right? Because, you know, you're right. Not a ton of knockouts in this division. Although, did you know now the strawweight title have never changed hands before without a knockout?
Really?
Only knockouts have ever changed the hand of the title, which is pretty crazy.
Slam, a head kick knockout, a slam knockout. We had some rare ones, too.
We had Rose knocking out Joanna Jędrzejczyk with the right hand in the follow-up punches.
Right.
You got... I mean, when Carla Esparza got TKO'd by Joanna Jędrzejczyk, I think she might have still been on her feet when she was technically out, but that was a TKO as well. So, like, all finishes to change the title's hands. And even if you want to go back to, you know, Carla winning the inaugural title over Rose Namajunas, she did it with a rear naked choke. So the finishes in the title fights have been pretty high. But, I definitely didn't see it going this way because I think, you know, this one felt like a power shot, but I think when you think about it, you know, in the long run, because of the way that she set it up and the way that it was, like, nuanced and the way that she worked around the guard and sort of worked to that head kick rather than, you know, it wasn't just like a big power head kick. It was, you know, it was slick. I think it surprised a lot of people, but also I think it was a little bit more technical than people even realize.
Right. No, it was, it was the fantastic thing. If the U.S. is trying to make inroads in China, last night was not a good night because all four Chinese fighters lost last night. Most notably, obviously, Zhang Weili. Now, I want to like Rose Namajunas like I used to, but it's hard now with all these stupid things she's been saying recently. But this should be celebratory moment, but it's hard to really get on her bandwagon now after the nonsense. And Weili Zhang seems like such a nice person. She had all this abuse heaped on her for no reason at all, too.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I will say, you know, I just lauded, you know, Jorge Masvidal for The way that he handled his loss, he handled it so well. I actually think Weili Zhang has handled it worse than a lot of champions in the past. That was some of the worst. I mean, she wobbled around the cage for like another 4 minutes complaining that the stoppage was too early. And like 4 minutes after she had been knocked out and she was still wobbly talking to a doctor, I still would have called the fight then if she was trying to continue. And she had 4 minutes to recover. So that was bad, and I don't know if you've seen her post since then. It was like, yeah, I still think that there's a bad stoppage, and I can't wait for them to book the rematch as soon as possible. It's like, ma'am, you are probably still concussed.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's like, the thing, though. You never know.
That being said, she doesn't deserve, you know, the boos and the weird comments from Rose Namajunas. But I'll also say this. If you're a fan of this sport and you're trying to find, you know, to be a fan of fighters who don't say dumb things, you are going to be disappointed more often than not.
Yes. don't look for role models here, ladies and gentlemen. Just come here for the fun.
There
are a few. Yes,
I will be a pretty sad man one day if for some reason Francis Ngannou sticks his foot in his mouth at some point in time.
Yeah,
because that dude seems like one of the most genuinely nice human beings on the whole planet. And you know, I've talked to a whole bunch of fighters who I feel that way about, too. But, it seems like you get disappointed a little bit more often than
not. True. It's true. I'm a big boy, so I can handle it. I don't look for role models. Charles Barkley told me not to look to athletes for role models back in the day, so I'll follow his advice. So I got some they actually labeled it wrong. They had Valentina and Rose's next opponent swapped here. I was reading, I'm like, what? Rose isn't going to fight that person next? That would be crazy. But okay, now that I got that figured out, who do you think is odds-on favorite to fight Rose next?
I think Rose,
Black is my answer. I'll give you a hint. Block.
Block?
Block? I don't know a fighter named Block.
All right, do you mean... Is it Ioane on J-Chan?
Yes. Huh. Again, everybody. The Holly Holm of the division. Is she really? Plus 120. Not like these, you know. This is just people putting odds out there. It's not like this is a sure thing. But, God, seriously, do we have to see another title fight with her? She's beat Michelson, is the only person she beat in the past, 2 years or
and
something.
She got beat by Rose twice already. I just don't think you can sell that fight. I think if it was Weili Zhang who had come away victorious here, I think you could book that fight. I think you could put Ioane Jacek in there. And actually, for that matter, I think you can book that fight with Weili Zhang now. You know, like, I think
That's true.
That rematch would be fun for Weili Zhang off of a loss. I honestly think what you do here is you do have to put Ioane Jacek in a number one contender fight with somebody. In with Mackenzie Dern, put her in with Marina Rodriguez, put her in with Carla Esparza again. And, like, any of those fights work, and if she wins, she's turning away other people who are contenders and is going to eventually force your hand to fight for the title again. But, I just don't see how she just jumps the queue right now. And to be honest, too, like, you know, I'm not excited to see Rose fight her again. I don't think Ioane has changed all that much, and definitely not for the better. So, I hope they go a different way with it. I will also say, you know, for my preference to see, you know, a number one contender fight materialize and a contender emerge and then Rose fight that one, Rose does fight fairly infrequently, so that probably plays well to that hope that they set some sort of fight up, you know. I think they want to push Mackenzie Dern, to be completely honest with you. I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to set her up with some fight night headliner to give her a 5-round fight against somebody, you know, somebody like Weili Zhang or somebody like Ioane Jacek or Marina Rodriguez or Carla Esparza versus Mackenzie Dern would be a ton of fun. Any of those sort of matchups would work for me. Ultimately, at least make Ioane fight again for it.
Yeah, because the last time we saw her was she got made to look like an alien, right? That was her last fight.
Yeah,
her face got oh my God.
And like, what, you know, not to be mean or anything like that, but like, what part of that fight makes you think to yourself, like, oh man, I got to see Ioane Jacek.
Exactly.
You know, like, she lost to Rose twice in a row. She beat Tisha Torres. Got beat up bad by Valentina Shevchenko, which we'll talk about in a second, is no shame because she's amazing. She beat Michelle Waterson, and then, she got turned into an alien by Weili Zhang. So she's 2-4 in her last four fights with four losses in title fights. You know,
yeah. So now she's Holly Holm.
She's Holly Holm. Four in her last four title fights. Who the hell would give her another one? They will, though. At some point, she'll get another one. But, like, it shouldn't be yet.
Holly Holm, Uriah Faber,
Uriah Faber ones used to drive Joanna. Me absolutely nuts.
I was watching him fight, so I didn't. I know you weren't a fan, but, yeah, he was fun to watch, so I didn't care. So you didn't mention after Joanna, someone's plus 210. I think it's a favorite of yours, an up-and-comer.
I know who you're talking about already, and I would love to see her fight.
I want you to say the name.
I just don't think they're going to give it to Tatiana Suarez yet.
No, not her.
Really? Oh, really? Yan Xiaonan.
Yeah, there you go. Yan I wanted to hear you too. Say that.
Yeah. And I say it well, too, I think.
You do. I'll have to ask. I have a friend who's Chinese. I'll have to ask him if you said it right. But anyhow. Joanna plus 120. Zhang 210, 50, Mackenzie plus 600, Weili Zhang or Zhang Weili plus 600, Marina Rodriguez plus 1,000.
Yeah, I would take Yan Xiaonan versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk for five rounds. I think that would be a fun five rounds.
Yeah.
Or like I said, Mackenzie Dern, I know Marina Rodriguez was way down on that list. Man, her striking is so fun right now after she did that to Amanda Ribas. Like, I'd watch that too. So, I mean, like any of those people, just get them fighting again, though. You know, like the giving people title shots off of losses where they didn't look that good to somebody who then lost the title. Like, what a weird move that would be.
Yeah. She didn't just look bad in the fight. Like, the damage she took was like insane. What she looked like. I don't know how you can give someone who got beat up that bad, title fight. But if you look like the rankings, the performance rankings that run on MMA-Manifesto, they're basically Rose and Weili are head and shoulders above everyone else. There's no one even close. Marina Rodriguez is next in line, and then Mackenzie Dern basically in a virtual tie with her. So we really do need some number one contender fights to get things rolling. So maybe you do have to throw, if they want Rose to fight right away, maybe you do have to throw Joanna in and let a couple of the up-and-comers fight it out to be next in line.
I just don't think she wants to fight right away. That's like not her style, right? Like
no, it's not her style.
Her style
for sure.
Is like big, long camps, improvement, her mental space appropriate, right? Like, because that's a big part of her game, too, is getting herself mentally ready for the fight. So, I think that's pretty important, too.
Watch your propaganda videos, right? Because you have to be. All right, we'll leave that alone. Let's move on. Hoof. I mean, at least I usually get at least one hoof out of Dan for episode. So there we go. So is it time to, just like Usman, is it time to stop calling her boring also? Because she's so clinical in there and doesn't make mistakes. I guess you can still call her boring even though she's finishing people. She dismantled Jessica Andrade in a little under three rounds. It was two rounds, 3:19 in the second round, where she crucifixed her and just dropping. I think stropping is a word, but I'm trying to say dropping elbows on the former strawweight champion's head. She was never in risk at all. She was basically in charge from every second of the fight, as she is in every fight she's in, save for Amanda Nunes. But that was, speaking of divisions that need number one contender, that flyweight were even worse off. There's Valentina, even after the loss, Andrade is still second in my rankings. And then next would be Caitlin Chookagian, which we've already had happen too. So they definitely need some life in flyweight. But speaking of last night or on the weekend, you can't look much better than she's been looking in the cage.
No, and she did it similarly to Usman in a way that we didn't expect, right? Like she went out there. And you know, I broke it down. I took Jessica Andrade here not because I thought she was going to win, but because I thought the value at plus 380 was just undeniable, right? Like, she was almost a plus 400 underdog. And I thought her wrestling gave her a better chance than that number even indicated. And to watch her lose by wrestling the whole time, it's so crazy to think of, right? Because you were like, she's a power puncher with good takedowns, and Valentina showed a little chink in that armor last time out when Jennifer Maya caught her kind of off guard in the first round and took her down. And my God, she must have just gone and just done wrestling for years, or that one takedown must have really been the flukiest thing that ever happened, because not only did she go in there and out-wrestle Jessica Andrade, she did it in a way that made Jessica Andrade look like like somebody who had never shot a takedown before in her whole life or defended one, right? Like, she looked clueless in there. And it wasn't a bad performance by Andrade as much as you have to credit just how good Valentina Shevchenko looked on those takedown attempts.
Yeah, she's a scary proposition. I don't know. There's probably not much else to say. She's just dominant. And sadly, her division isn't, at least at this point, there are some up-and-comers, but at this point, there's not really much to challenge her.
I want to give a shout-out to Lauren Murphy. I feel like she gets overlooked all the
time. She's not an up-and-comer, but yeah.
Right, she's not an up-and-comer, but like, you're right, there are up-and-comers in this division that are super exciting, right on the edge of the top 15 or just barely cracked in. You know, you're talking about your Miranda Mavericks, who's an absolute bulldog in there. And there are other ones too, but she's the one who sticks out of my head as being one of my, I mean, Talia Santos is kind of fun, and look good after her first really bad performance. You know, like, there are people in the flyweight division who are going to be fun up and comers that will challenge her in a year or two. Cause I really believe Miranda Maverick's on that trajectory, but you're right. Lauren Murphy isn't that like young up and comer. But, man, has she put together, like, a completely new version of herself and is winning here at flyweight? Since she's come up the weight class, not only does she look better up the weight class, but she keeps surprising us with things, too. Like, I think the way that she dominated Roxanne Modafari with her grappling and her wrestling, you know, right after watching Roxy do that to Macy Barber, I mean, like, is incredible, right? Like, and she sort of reinvented herself. She left the MMA lab, which is a place she had been training for pretty much since she left Alaska, which is where she's originally from. She had trained at the MMA lab that whole time and just finally decided it wasn't the best situation for her. And she's got this weird piecemeal camp now where she trains boxing in this place and jiu-jitsu in this place and, you know, straight MMA rounds with certain training partners in this place. And she does it all around in Texas, and the coaches work together. And I think it's worked amazing for her that she's, like, created this little mini super camp for herself. And you know, not for anything, she has beat some, like, late last-second opponents who filled in and stuff like that. That ain't her fault. Like, she's definitely earned a title shot. I think she's fighting JoJo Calderwood next. I kind of expect her to beat Calderwood, and they really should just let her get her shot. Whether you think she's a credible opponent for Valentina Shevchenko, I mean, almost seems irrelevant at this point, right? Like, who does seem like a credible opponent for her in the whole UFC?
Well, so is Lauren Murphy odds-on favorite to get
no,
the next?
No, they're going to
fight. Who is?
They're going to fucking
then?
Say that they want her to fight Amanda Nunes again.
And yes.
Let me tell you something. I don't want it. Like, I don't want it for the same reason I don't want Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Rose Namajunas 3. Who the hell wants a trilogy when the first two went one way? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I mean, what do we see? Chuck and Tito 4 before Tito 1? Like, you're just going to keep running back the matches? And it's not like Nunes doesn't have opponents, fresh faces, that she can face at bantamweight, right? Like, she doesn't have any at featherweight. It's not a real division. But, like, she could still fight Juliana Pena, who she's going to fight. She could still fight Aspen Ladd, who she's never fought. She could still fight the Russian gal there. Yana Kunitskaya. She could still fight Yana Kunitskaya, who she's never fought. There are people in that division, and there are up-and-comers, again, like at flyweight in that division, who are going to make themselves known. Why the hell would you go to a super fight that's already had, you know, two renditions already that have gone the way of the most dominant champion in history, you know?
Yep. Well, Shevchenko is pretty much like clockwork. She fights twice a year, so who is she going to fight next? And if you don't think it's going to be Nunes, Nunes already has a fight. Who do you think the experts think is next after Nunes, plus 200?
It wasn't Lauren Murphy?
Because that's
no, a crime
Murphy's,
if it wasn't Lauren.
Murphy's plus 300.
Okay, so she's third.
Yep.
So is it Calderwood?
No, Calderwood is fifth, plus 800. Stomp
it,
the Gumby.
Is it Rose Namajunas?
No.
Okay. I mean, hey, if we're going super fights, maybe they thought super fight again.
Yeah.
Yep. Which would have been a crazy. Joanna Jędrzejczyk. No, I'm just kidding.
No. Yeah. we've seen that. We don't need to see that again.
Man, I'm having
someone who's four. She's 4-1 in the UFC. Brazilian.
4-1 Brazilian at flyweight. Am I missing? 4-1 Brazilian at flyweight. Oh, is it Araújo? Vivian Araújo.
Viviana Rougeau, yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. I can see that. So will it be her? She seems kind of lower ranked. Who did she? Did she just beat Roxy too?
Yeah, I'm checking.
I mean, I know she's good. She didn't even dawn on me as a possible opponent. Yeah, because she's coming off. She lost to Jessica I a while back, if I'm not mistaken.
Sorry, I interrupt. Talita Bernardo, Alexis Davis, lost to Jessica I, beat Montana De La Rosa, beat Roxanne Modafferi. That's pretty much as good as resume as you're going to get in this division.
Unless you're talking about a two-fight win streak. Unless you're talking about Lauren Murphy, who in the last 3 years has beat Romero-Varela, Andrea Lee, Roxanne Modafferi, and Lyra Sharakova, and she finished 2 out of 3 of those. So, like...
Yeah, but she took the fight already, so that's the problem. Well, it's all about timing. It's all about timing here.
That's true. It is definitely about timing.
So, and then the other name on the list was Cynthia Calvillo at plus 750. So,
who's coming off a loss?
Yeah,
who's coming off a loss?
Hey, it's not much of a division, let me tell you. They have to build it up. So that is the title fights, and we learned that Dan loves Laura Murphy. So. Before we'll go through because it was the monument tonight. It wasn't just title fights that we're talking about. So we'll get you through those quick before we're out the door here. But let me tell you about a couple of our last sponsors first. BetterLand.Vegas. BetterLand.Vegas is like YouTube, but for what hashtag degens only care about, which is sports betting. We're giving out free daily picks over on our BetterLand Vegas profile page. So BetterLand Vegas is always running a ton of free contests as well. They have a bunch of free picks and handicappers to check out. Make sure you subscribe to our profile so you don't miss a pick. And speaking R as in Sports Gambling Podcast, that would be sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. You'll get my MMA picks Saturdays. And if you want to check out Top Turtle, you can see Dan in his man cave giving you picks on that channel also. We also are sponsored by Riffer, and we're also on Riffer. Sports Gambling Podcast is now on Riffer. Riffer is your home to mini episodes and free picks from the SGPN crew. If you don't have time to listen to an entire episode, Riffer is a perfect quick fix. Make sure to subscribe to the SGPN page by going to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/Riffer. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/Riffer. But we know all our listeners listen to every second of Dan and my podcast here. But just in case you don't have time to listen to all the other ones. So obviously you listen to ours, especially you Germans. all right, middleweights. As I predicted, Uriah Hall via... TKO over Chris Weidman. When he took him 17 seconds, fight went just the way I predicted. Weidman shot, and it sounded like he got shot, actually. Did you hear that, the sound of that leg kick?
I haven't seen the sound of it, but I did get a freeze frame.
You didn't see the sound?
Or see the sound. I didn't hear the sound. I didn't go back and watch it looking to listen to the sound. I definitely don't want to hear the sound, but I did have a friend, if you want to call somebody that, who sends you the type of things, who freeze framed it as Weidman stepped back on his leg. And it looks like something I would have done to my Doink the Clown action figure, the gummy ones back in the day, to just have his leg be mangled and turned up at the sides. It was horrifying in the worst possible way. I will say, obviously, you can sort of draw the parallels there of leg injuries. Did you happen to see Patrick Cote, fellow Canadian here's post about the chain of leg injuries?
No. Oh yeah. He hurt his leg against Silva.
And
Silva hurt his against Weidman. The Weidman hurt his because, Uriah Hall.
Yeah. And he even wrote something like, if I was Uriah Hall, I wouldn't be sitting all that easy. But the other thing too, is even before he made it to the UFC, Patrick Cote took some dude down and it, like, snapped his shin bone.
Oh, my gosh.
So, like, Patrick Cote snapped some dude's shin bone, had his knee explode to watch two more shin bones break like that. It's crazy stuff.
This is worse than the Top Turtle curse.
Yeah, the Top Turtle curse was not 100%.
Dan's trying to debunk it.
Because Jeff Molina, and we'll get to the prelims in a second, Jeff Molina not only looked damn good, but he cashed an extra $50K.
Dan's just trying to debunk it because he's scared he's going to have trouble getting guests. Top Turtle does not make you break your leg. Chris Weidman has not been on the show. But yeah, for a guy who we question like his mental fortitude or makeup for the sport, that was not good for Uriah Hall to have that happen to him.
Yeah,
in that fight.
I would say he seemed to be handling it well, but I don't know if that will be the long term of it, because it did seem to affect him right away. He did speak afterwards and spoke very clearly and very respectfully. Mad props to him for saying that he would give Chris Weidman another shot no matter where he was ranked at some point in time, because he deserves it. But I will also say I don't think that's something he's ever going to have to take him up on, because I kind of feel like this is the end for Chris Weidman, don't you?
It should be. It should be.
He's 36 years old. We just saw his leg break in a way that, like, people just don't come back the same as, you know, like, ever.
No.
Yeah.
It won't be the last, though. He'll be back, guaranteed. He was planning on making a title run despite being knocked out 5 times in the past 7 fights. So these guys, especially wrestlers, they have that mentality that they're not going to quit. So unless someone makes him quit, I see him coming back.
Whether we
like it or not, but I see it happening.
I hate it so much.
Yep.
But if he does, I just hope they let him fight somebody like Kevin Holland. Just let him take Kevin Holland down for 15 minutes and let him feel good again. Because, like, I mean, he's going to be out for, you have to imagine, at least a year plus, right?
Yeah, you'd think. Yeah, I haven't done that to my leg before, so I'm not sure. I did that to my arm. I did that to my arm playing basketball. That's not nowhere near as the leg. The arm was only I was only up like 3 months. But yeah, leg is pretty gross. Daniel Cormier was having a fit on commentary. Now you're doing the clown figure. So you had him break his leg. Who was that against? You know, did that person did that figure go on to break someone's leg? And figure out if there's a curse here.
No. Big Daddy Cool always wins. He never broke anything, and he never lost any matches with my wrestling action figures.
You were a Diesel guy, were you?
I was a big Diesel guy. Yeah, Kevin Nash, Diesel, every iteration of him. My older brother was a Scott Hall / Razor Ramon /
Well, he's way cooler, obviously. So
he was not cooler, but when they became tag team, this is so off topic. Then when they became tag team partners in NWO, we like didn't know how to like get mad at one another anymore,
right?
Because we were like on the same team and it felt wrong.
This is not, but as a matter of fact, this is not off topic. Apple has us listed under wrestling podcast, so we're right on topic. And retro wrestling is the way to go for the ratings. So I'm saying we're right on topic there.
Perfect.
All right, light heavyweights, another weird one. This is where Dan lost his lock, and I honestly smiled, which was I felt bad about myself for doing that, because I don't want to see Jimmy Crute get hurt, and I don't want to lose picks. But I'm like, oh, Dan lost. That's going to give me something to talk about tomorrow on the podcast. But yeah, Jimmy Crute. I guess we pretty much already broke this fight down. There wasn't really much to say. Anthony Smith looked good. Like I can't take that away from him. He did look good, but I wouldn't have been surprised if Crute had won that fight if he'd been able to continue. But basically, the name of the game is to make it so your opponent can't continue fighting. That's what happened. Whether he did that on purpose or not, that's basically what happened. So Anthony Smith got 2 wins over 2 up and young up and comers. Probably he's not going to get much credit for this one, but nonetheless, he's on. I had him written off, and he seems to still be hanging around the top. So I assume they're probably just going to keep feeding him young guys until he goes away.
Yeah, somebody against like Megamed and Goliath next, right? Like,
right. Yep.
That's
yep,
another guy who's kind of up and comer and needs a name to try to build off of, and could be turned away by somebody like Anthony Smith. So.
Yep.
Yeah, ultimately, I will say this, too. I didn't lose any good feelings about where I think Jimmy Crute is in his future. He's 25 years old, right? And
yep.
Also, you know, we've talked a lot about people's reactions to wins and losses with, you know, Uriah Hall and Weili Zhang not dealing with it well and Jorge Masvidal. I want to give it up to Anthony Smith on this one for, like, finding Jimmy Crute afterwards. They look like they said a little prayer together afterwards, and he gave him, like, very clearly some, like, positive words of encouragement afterwards. And Crute stood up as much as he could stand up and picked up Anthony Smith's hand. So, like, you know, classy acts on both of their parts there, because that was a nice scene after, unfortunately, a really nasty ending.
Yeah, no, that's no surprise. Both those guys are class acts. Crute, and this isn't a Ashley Long is basically a temporary injury, right?
His
nerves or whatever, and, you know, and you're fine shortly afterwards. So it's not like he's got a broken leg or anything like that. So.
Yeah, it's exactly what happened to Sean O'Malley, and he, like, posted a video of him going for a run the next day, you know? So
it's
probably fine as you're listening to this.
Right. And same thing happened.
Mighty Mouse.
Why am I blanking? In Bellator.
Michael Chandler.
Yeah, happened to him against Brent Primus, too. Yep. He lost his belt because he couldn't walk properly, even though it was just a temporary thing. But, yeah, it happens, unfortunately. But, yeah, he will be fine. We already moved off Weidman, but I thought it was classy that Dana White tweeted out a video of Weidman breaking his leg and saying how Uriah Hall just broke a UFC record by winning a fight by knockout without throwing a strike. So I thought that was right on brand for Dana White.
I would say this, two things about that. First of all, did that feel like it was more disparaging to Hall or Weidman?
Yeah, hard to say. He does like crapping on Hall. That's what it felt like to me.
It felt like this is my chance to say Uriah Hall doesn't deserve any props for this. And then he, you know, like immediately, like, you know, just kind of doubled or tripled down on that. And then the other thing I would say is he's wrong. It's not the first guy to win with no strikes. There's a guy on Twitter. I highly suggest following him after you follow me and Jeff. Numbers MMA. He's amazing with stats and stuff like that. He's got packages on different stats you can buy from him and stuff like that. But he actually pointed out there have been 10 in the past who have won without landing a strike. Ronda Rousey over Kat Zingano, Stefan Struve over LeVar Big Johnson, Matt Hughes over Frank Trigg the first time. Like, there's a whole bunch of them in there who haven't landed any strikes. So, like, it was wrong, and it seemed like it was a shot at Uriah Hall.
In that whole the whole dialogue there, Dan said he was talking about someone's package, and then he said Big Johnson. I just thought I would mention that.
Somebody's stat package, and his nickname was Big Johnson.
All right,
not to be confused Harry
Bush.
With Dakota Harry Bush.
But, yeah, and I basically tuned out once you said Dana White was wrong, because obviously you're lying, because Dana White's not wrong. Future president of the United States, Dana White is never wrong. So, all right. Prelims, Randy Ruby Brown looked very good, destroying well past his expiry date, but Alex, the cowboy, the Brazilian cowboy. So Randy Brown is on the come up, knocked on the top 15 door, I would say, after that.
Yeah, not that far away. And I will say I really enjoyed the one-arm rear naked choke, which you don't get to see very often.
Yes,
that's one of my personal jiu-jitsu favorites.
Dan likes choking guys, too. There's another thing to add to the sound bites, everyone. So, Dwight Grant, we basically talked about this. I got the pick right, so I'm not going to complain that he robbed Stefan Sekulic, who is 0-2 now in the UFC. You'd think he probably would get another kick of the can after he looked good last night. So hopefully he gets another shot at things.
Yeah, I think he clearly won that fight. And then when you go back to the fact that his original loss was to Ramzan Emiev, who's, you know, a top 15er in his own right. Yeah, I think Sekulic gets another shot.
Yep. My lock pick, and we both told you how it was going to happen. I hope people listen. Brendan Allen via submission against Carl Robertson. Robertson. My son thinks it should be Robertson also. He's telling me. Submission ankle lock. So that was a very impressive performance of Brendan Allen. He's definitely a guy to look out for in middleweight.
Yeah, and also kind of a bad move on Roberson's part. He had that, like,
right.
It seemed like he could use that leg leverage and the leg lace there to get himself back up to his feet, and instead he was like, nah, I'm going to try to submit this guy, and then immediately was promptly submitted, which, if you know anything about leg locks, that's kind of what you get yourself into when you're going for legs, is, you know, you're also, you know, pretty vulnerable yourself in a lot of those positions. So, yeah, like, for a guy who's not very good at submission defense, it seemed kind of like a dumb move on top of that to just tangle up with Brendan Allen, who's a beast.
And you can't, it's not, with leg locks, you can't gut it out for the 5 seconds till the round ends either, or
negative.
You will not have a knee left after that. So, yeah, that wasn't the smartest move there. What else do we have? I picked against my fellow Canadian, and I won, as per usual. Pat Sabatini looked very good against Tristan Connolly. He looked very good. His wrestling was super, super impressive.
I think it's time to start talking about Daniel Gracie as an up-and-coming coach, too, out of Pennsylvania, because he's got Pat Sabatini, who looked like a smaller version of Sean Brady, who just also happens to train out of that same place. It feels very much like Daniel Gracie has gone and found some of, like, the meanest-looking Pennsylvania fucking wrestler-looking dudes and then has taught them all sick jujitsu. And, like, that is scary as hell.
Yes, that is a scary picture Dan just painted. So, yeah, he looked very good. Then, basically, almost the all-Asian early prelims. Dinab Batgarel looked very good against Kevin Natividad. He murked him in 50 seconds, so I was happy about that because we had him picked in that one.
And that's, that's a second straight one that he's looked
exactly.
good, too. Like, he's looked as good in both of those fights, too.
Yeah, we got to keep an eye on him. Could be a star from Mongolia, but he's not the Mongolian murderer. That was someone else on the card, actually. It was Rong Zhu, wasn't it? And he lost.
No, I think the Mongolian murder was Kilang Iori, if I'm not mistaken.
I think the Mongolian murderer. That's such
Which also, it's such like a bad nickname. When I mean, I think he's from Inner Mongolia, China.
Yeah.
Which again, I'm not going to pretend to know the politics of that.
No.
But it feels, if you're not that. From, if you're not from Mongolia, it feels like you shouldn't have the nickname the Mongolian murderer.
Probably not. So, Kazula Vargas beat Rong Zhu. I thought Rong Zhu won, but then I see he... I think I must have been having rose-colored glasses on because one judge had a 30-26 for Vargas. So
that judge was very wrong. Like not slightly wrong, very wrong. That same judge, if I'm not mistaken, also gave in the first fight we'll talk about, Na Liang won the first round on both judges' scorecards, both of the first judges, and on the second one she lost at 10-8.
There you go. Well, let's jump to that one. Sadly, she looked game. Dragon Girl Na Liang. She was one. Both of our picks is like one to keep an eye on. And we did say that we don't know exactly what you're going to get until you see these people in the UFC. But she ended up losing to Ariane Carnelosi via TKO. But she looked definitely game and looks like she's got a future here.
Yeah, I think for her it's a little bit just about energy management, because not only did she look exhausted, like it seemed like some of those takedown attempts she probably should have either bailed on or worked better at, like, cutting angles to finish them rather than just, like, hulking up and to finish them. Which, like, to her credit, she got a lot of good takedowns in there, but it just seemed like, you know, maybe she wasn't using her energy as wisely as possible. And, hey, she's coming off of four straight finishes that she finished her opponents pretty quick. So that's maybe she didn't think she had to.
And hey, you're not a Dragon Girl, so you don't know what kind of powers Dragon Girls have. So
that's correct.
That's true. And then the fight of the night, which Dan briefly touched on before, was a fight before that, or actually after this one, second fight of the night. Jeff Molina, Chiling Aori, flyweight, very good battle. Molina got the win there. I was thinking we were going to lose that pick, but he ended up pulling through 29-28, 29-28, 29-27, another interesting scorecard there. So, yeah, both those guys look good, and they look like nice additions to the flyweight division, who apparently we had it buried a few years ago, but it's back, and they're signing new talent for it.
He also broke a record for most strikes landed in a,
oh, really?
In a flyweight fight. Yeah, I think they said he landed 189 of them or something like that, which is just crazy output for a three-round fight.
Yeah.
But he passed Davison Figueiredo in the Brandon Moreno fight for the record for strikes landed, which is when you consider that being, you know, that was largely seen as like one of the fights of the year last year, and then add in the fact that like it was a 5-round fight. I mean, that really just gives you some context of how much Jeff Molina was throwing in that fight.
Yeah, and I always I speak for both of us, we like the flyweight, so we're glad they're adding more. And it's nice to see them winning the bonus because they make no money at flyweight. So they both guys are probably making $10,000 to show, $10,000 to win. So another $50,000 definitely helps. Definitely goes a long way. So that puts that wild fight card to bed. That was next week's surely going to be a downer after that. But hey, who's to say? Next week will be UFC and ESPN Reyes versus Prochaska. What are you laughing about, Dan?
I'm not sure. I think it's Prochaska.
Prochaska. It is Prochaska. I have Czech friends, too. I should not be mispronouncing names
you
like
made
that.
It,
so.
You made it sound like you put his name as like the guy who runs the bar at the country club, Chaz, in the middle of there. Prochaska.
That's true. Now, despite only having one win in the UFC, he beat Volkan Ozdemir. This could be number one contender fight for him because he's got nothing but finishes on his when you look back at all KOs with him, and a lot of big names when he was over in Ryzen, King Mo, Brandon Halsey, Fabio Maldonado, CB Dolloway. So I would say it's probably a number one contender fight for him. I wouldn't say the same for Dominic Reyes, though, probably.
No, probably not, especially coming off of the knockout loss to Jan Blankovic. If Jan is still the champ, it's going to be a tough sell. You also failed to mention there, too, that Yuri's got a win over Vadim Nemkov, the Bellator
champ. Right, yes.
He knocked him absolutely silly to the point where Nemkov wouldn't continue on into the second round.
There you go. So, yeah, it's not the strongest fight card on paper, but you know, the main event should be very fun. There should be actually lots of fun fights on it. And a lot of the times, the ones that don't look insane on paper are the ones that are the most exciting. But degenerates don't care how exciting or how stacked the fight card is, because you can bet on all these fights, no matter how good these fighters are. So at least on paper. A couple other things before we put it to bed. I guess the biggest star last night, actually, misspoke, biggest star at UFC 261 was Jake Paul, because he had the crowd chanting all night long.
Oof.
There's my second oof, guys.
It just seems like he's going to fight in the octagon, right? Also, I will say this. I've oofed on Jake Paul comments on this show probably two or three times in the last week.
What do you talk about on Top Turtle, though, Dan?
I tried to not talk about it in turns out Shockwave Dave does have some pull in what we talk about. So, did you see his recent post shit talking Dana White? I gotta give him props for this. I don't want to give him props.
Yeah.
But his recent
talk
about
money, yeah.
Yeah, he was like, Dana, there's a reason why people are talking about me, and your fighters make a third of what I do. You know, like,
yeah.
Start paying your fighters, and they don't have to keep calling me out. And like, hey, he's right. He's saying what literally I was thinking, and it made me feel so bad that the person you dislike the most is saying the thing that makes sense.
But UFC wants to be the star, not the fighters, and Dana White wants to be the one making the money, not the fighters, so that's not going to happen. So the reason I brought him up is I got odds for his proposed fight against Daniel Cormier. That's who he's called out next. He's going to fight
MMA fight.
Boxing match. What are the odds for Cormier versus
Jesus
Paul?
Christ. How do you
not the odds that it happens, the odds of who's going to win.
How do you even line something like that? Where you're going, Daniel
the
Cormier
generous
in
do
a
that, Dan.
Yeah, I know, but like Daniel Cormier in a boxing match? I mean, Daniel Cormier doesn't have bad boxing. He'd have a size advantage, but he does have the dad bod thing going on. I don't know. I'll say Cormier negative 220.
Cormier minus 500.
Oh, okay. So, that sounds better, but I wasn't sure where we were after people maybe thought knocking out Ben Askren meant something.
Yep. And Jake Paul 350. And I had this was a backdoor trick to get Dan to say Daniel Cormier's name, and he said it properly, though. So it blew up in my face. A couple other things to note. Dana White's doing his thing that he always does where he does contract negotiations with fighters in public. He stated that John Jones wants $30 million to fight Francis Ngannou, so they're going to give Derek Lewis the fight next. And Chris Jones says, no, I never asked for that. What do you talk about? So this is, you know, not really much else to say to that. This is a typical Dana White. That's what he does. He gets lies out there and tries to hardball the fighters that way. So that no fight's been mentioned. No fight's been booked there yet, but he claims it's going to be Derek Lewis, but we'll see. A surprise fight that was booked that I want to talk about just before we head out is middleweight title. Israel Adesanya wants to get right back in the cage right away, apparently. So he'll be back in June. It won't be Robert Whittaker, though, who is the man after last 2 weekends ago is the man we all thought would get the fight or deserves the fight, but he probably isn't ready to have to fight again right away. So they're giving it to Marvin Vettori. Part two, he gave Adesanya his toughest fight in his lead up to his title run here. So we're going to have Adesanya versus Vettori 2. Quick thoughts on that, Dan. That's in June.
I don't mind the booking because I think I don't think this means Robert Whittaker gets looked over or needs another win. I just think it means Robert Whittaker fights probably Israel Adesanya in September, right? Like, and he lives in Australia or New Zealand. I can't remember which. But he's probably facing that whole quarantine before he gets back into the country, needs to be able to see his daughters, you know, like all of that kind of stuff going on for Whittaker. So, yeah, I can see he doesn't want to, you know, after having a 2-week quarantine, get right back into camp, turn right back around, and wind up in a 2-week quarantine again in just a couple of months. So, and plus, he doesn't want to fight Israel Adesanya just on a quick turnaround. He wants that whole camp dedicated to trying to figure out the riddle that is Israel Adesanya. So, I think at first I had a visceral reaction to it where I was like, why him now? And then I thought about it and was like, oh, no, this actually makes sense. So I like that the fight was made. I like that Izzy wants to stay active. I still don't give pretty much any middleweight in the world much of a chance to replicate what Jan Blankovic did because, you know, Jan Blankovic, people will remember that he won those last two rounds by wrestling him up a little bit, but you also have to remember he won some of those earlier rounds with his hands, and I just don't see that as a path to very many middleweights here, and especially being smaller than Jan Blankovic. You know, like they'll actually be Israel Adesanya's size rather than much bigger than him, so not giving him a ton of chance, but I, you know, hey, I'm okay with the fight being made.
All right, let's go. I got the odds right here. Adesanya in the first fight, he closed at minus 230. What is the opening at for the rematch this time for the title?
Negative 300. I'll take
250. So yeah, minus 250. So you're right in there.
A little bit bigger.
You'd think it probably would. It'll probably go up closer we get to the fight too. More than likely, because he is a name, and I think all the smart money is going to come in on him too. So yeah, Vettori is basically just right place, right time.
Yeah, you said it. You said it earlier. Timing,
which is often the case.
Right? That's why Lauren Murphy is not getting the next title shot, most likely,
right,
when she probably deserves it, and it's why Robert Whittaker is going to wait a little bit.
And it's why Leon Edwards never seems to. He's never going to get a title fight because he's always at the wrong place at the wrong time.
They just keep telling him like, "Oh no, that fight has to be on a Tuesday for some reason. Sorry, exactly. You're not free."
All right. Hopefully, we were in the right place, right time for you. Hope you enjoyed episode 32 of our telecast. We'll be back with episode 33 Wednesday night probably Wednesday night. Now that I'm posting them myself, as soon as we record it, I'll get it into your dirty degenerate ear holes, and that one we'll be breaking down the Reyes versus Prochazka. I'm going to say it like that now on purpose.
I can't wait for Prochazka to come up 30 more
Prochazka.
Times.
Prochazka, yes. In the meantime, in the few days you have between listening to this and listening to the next podcast, your homework is to follow us on Twitter, of course, Jeff Fox Writer and Gumby Vreeland. What else should you do? You should listen to... You can listen to Dan's podcast, I guess, Top Turtle. Who do you have on this week on the Top Turtle podcast, Dan?
I am talking to Dustin Jacoby, who took a short-notice fight to fight Ion Cutelaba.
That's tough.
Yeah, it's a tough short-notice fight, and he took it on like 10 days' notice, which is even crazier, so we talked about that. And then I talked to Giga Chikadze, who's fighting Cody Swanson in the co-main event.
Co-main event, yep.
And he's pretty salty about the way that nobody seems to want to fight him, he's being overlooked in the rankings, which, funny enough, actually, right after he said he was being overlooked in the rankings, he popped right into the rankings. So
sometimes that's all it takes, squeaky wheel theory there. So, listen to Top Turtle. You can listen to Prelim Picker, too, while you're at it, see who Dan's picking on the prelims and make sure it corresponds with who he picks on our next podcast also. And if they don't, make sure you call him out on Twitter. He loves that. at Grumby Vreeland. And you can read our stuff, sportsgumbypodcast.com. I think I've assigned Dan some articles, so hopefully he'll be sending them, letting me know they're ready to roll soon. And I'll have some stuff on there, too. I'll have MMA stuff later on in the week. And you can read our stuff at MMA-manifesto.com also. I think that's pretty much it for this week, so I'll say bye. And to the majority of our listeners, I'll say auf Wiedersehen, bis später.